My name is Bill Yang, and I'm a consultant from JAS Global Advisors, supporting ICANN on TNCA projects. With me on the call from ICANN are Francisco Arias, Karen Wentz, Margie Millam, and Kirk Pritz. Participation for this call is taking place through Adobe Connect, online at icann.adobeconnect.com/TMCH, where you can view the slides and enter the queue to answer questions. Just a few housekeeping items. Please mute your phone. You can do so. I've received note that I am having some audio problems. Just a moment. Is the audio better now?
Not really.
I see. That's not good. Give me just a moment to get on from a different phone. Just a second. Hello, is this audio better?
Yes, it is. It is from here.
Okay, excellent. To pick back up, just a few housekeeping items. Please mute your phones. You can do so through the Adigo Connect bridge by pressing *6 to unmute *7. Please use the Adobe Connect where possible, or raise your hand using the user icon. I believe everyone's familiar with these processes. A reminder that follow-up will occur via email outside the call. Participants can use the distribution list for discussion. We do ask that you try to meet our deadlines so we can make sure that we capture your comments in preparation for the calls. And a reminder that this call is being recorded. Our agenda today, we'll have a few minutes for this housekeeping, and then we're going to try to dedicate 40 minutes to discussion on the issue of data locations, T1. We'll try to put about 40 minutes also into T3 communication protocols for the clearinghouse, and then we'll wrap up. The purpose of this group is to provide advice on key clearinghouse processes and high-level technical implementation issues. We are not here to design solutions, but we are trying to inform the business requirements that we're developing for the providers that were selected out of the RFI process. The technical track has allocated more time than the process track around three interrelated areas of discussion. We will spread the discussions across multiple calls over several months. The areas today are data location, and that's specifically about the business requirements that we're going to apply to the distribution of clearinghouse data to registries and registrars, should any occur. We're also going to talk about the protocols that the vendor and other parties will be required to use to implement core functionality of the clearinghouse, and what extensions to standards are going to be required to support that functionality. I'm going to note that the other major area for the technical track is to discuss the classification of data in terms of knowing how important and how sensitive that data is, and the mandatory access controls that will need to be applied to that data under T2. Our first discussion is scheduled to occur on that on January 13th. (Clears throat) So the written comments that we received about data location were largely driven around concerns about the misuse and abuse of clearinghouse data. It was raised many times, and we've heard that. We had some discussion of that on the process call this morning. I expect us to have more discussion on that today on this call. But the written comments did observe that different kinds of data will probably have different requirements about protection. From a technical standpoint, the lookup string service, the service that will identify whether a particular string matches something in the clearinghouse, needs 100% availability and very high performance. From a technical standpoint, this is a very good contender for replication or local caching. There are fewer performance requirements that would apply to the querying the notices data, and that may be the only data that has substantial privacy requirements. Other comments hovered around discussing the authorization tokens for Sunrise and suggesting various methods to construct them in a strong cryptographic manner that would also be used for authentication of those tokens. So I'd like to get us directly into the discussion at this point. We have a few seeding questions here, but we'd like to hear what you have to say. Specifically, what we were wondering is, what are the potential scenarios for misuse and abuse of clearinghouse data? Again, we discussed that somewhat this morning, but we'd like to discuss it further. And also, what additional requirements could mitigate against those scenarios? And are there alternative models that we should be considering?
Okay, so I will, thank you, Bill. This is Karen Lentz speaking. I will open a queue if there are any comments on that, the set of issues that Bill went through. First, I've got John McElwain.
Thanks. I mean, it's a little bit of a repeat, but the concerns that we had were scams being run by having access to that data. One of the examples that I gave was, for instance, the Dear CEO emails that are, I think most people are familiar with. The ability for competitors to access competitive intelligence. So as it stands right now, there's really no one database of worldwide trademark registrations, and this the Trademark Clearinghouse will have all of that. Christina pointed out as well, it could be used for third parties sort of maliciously to uncover that perhaps a well-known brand wasn't registered in a jurisdiction and go out, and particularly if it's a jurisdiction that's the first to file, register that trademark in that jurisdiction to sort of blackmail a brand owner. With respect to the scams being run, one of the additional requirements, and I think we started getting into this in an earlier call, would be to have a familiar form of trademark notice. And I think it would to trademark registrants that have their trademarks recorded in the clearinghouse. And one thought I had was perhaps having a letter that would also have an email that would also have a link that would take you to the Trademark Clearinghouse so that there could be some sort of certification. I think that's the key, is that we need to be able to make sure that people can trust the notices that they're getting. If not, they can be used to sort of drum up, scare, whatever you want to say, trademark owners that are not maybe as sophisticated into registering their brands within domain spaces that they wouldn't otherwise do. And that, thank you.
Yep, thank you, John. We have some overlaps. Some of the people on the call were on the process call early this morning where this was discussed in a little bit different context, and so there's some of those same people and also some different people in this group that's kind of looking at things from a technical standpoint. So thanks for going through those, John. Francisco is next.
Thank you, Karen. I have a question for John and maybe others in the call. So what I hear is that the data that will be potentially used for misuse or abuse will be the data that will go into the let me get back to the previous slide where we mentioned something like this. The data from the notice data, it's probably the one that has that could be used for this misuse or abuse. But the question is, what about the strings, only the strings that are derived from the for the trademark itself? Is there any concern with the strings derived from the trademark to be cached by registries or registrars?
This is John Macklin. I'm not sure I totally follow the description of the strings that are generated. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. Let's imagine IBM has a trademark that is IBM and decides to register in the clearinghouse. So the clearinghouse will have an entry that says IBM. And if you have Microsoft, you will have supposing it's a trademark, and Microsoft decide to enter that into the clearinghouse, you will have a second string that will be Microsoft, and so on. So will there be any concern with that list of strings to be duplicated in the registries or registrars so they can have higher availability for this service? Remember, they need to know which strings are in the clearinghouse to see if there is a match with a domain name that is being registered. Is there any concern with having this type of information in the registries or registrars?
Just John McElwain. I think that there is. I think that probably can be satisfied via confidentiality. We kind of got into this earlier on the earlier call, confidentiality agreements and with the registrars and registries. So I think there needs to be at least to be some sort of contractual protection with the trademark clearinghouse data.
This is Francisco again. So I understand there could be some confidentiality issues with the information, but that could be addressed by having some sort of agreement. So that means it is possible to have this information in the registers and registrars, I understand.
I certainly think it is possible. I don't know if it's ideal. Part of that would come down to enforcement. So you would just want to make sure that if there was any bad actors that had access, that there was, you know, robust enforcement of those agreements. Otherwise, I think most people would prefer the data to reside in the trademark clearinghouse. But that may be a technical issue beyond my expertise to determine whether that could be efficiently handled. I think most people would prefer the data to reside in just one location, but I understand the technical concerns and that might need to be solved via contracts.
Yes, this is Francisco again. There could be a potential technical issue with having the clearinghouse as a central point, which will have to be queried by every single new utility registry before they register a name. So that's a technical issue One way to handle that would be to have this information cached in the registries or registrar, depending on who is doing the on the other decision on who should be doing the query to the clearinghouse. I have a following question on what you said, John. What would be an example of misuse of this type of data if you only have the strings that are derived from the trademark? What is an example of potential misuse of this information?
That's a good question. I think that technically just having a list of a trademark submitted to the clearinghouse with no further add-on data, the risk is probably going to reside only in scams being run, Francisco. So there could still be a sort of dear CEO type situation if that that list were ever to leak out. A party would have the opportunity to sort of try to drum up registrations into a particular TLD space. Though there's obviously the full set of data, contact information, jurisdictions is the much more crucial concern there. So I think just having a mark, there are legitimate concerns, but it's not nearly as heightened as the rest of the data that will be in the trademark clearinghouse.
All right, thank you. I have Tom Barrett next in the queue.
Yeah, I thought of another scenario. Certainly, if I think you could envision someone taking this list of domain names and looking at the legacy TLDs to see if in fact those domain names are registered or not in the legacy TLDs. And so it may in fact drive a sort of the equivalent of a type of swatting as a phenomenon in some of the legacy TLDs for strings that are being protected in the new ones.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Francisco?
Yes. Tom, on that respect, I understand the information about trademarks, and forgive me if I'm saying something completely wrong. I certainly am not an expert on this area, but I understand the trademarks are sometimes public information on several countries. I understand that information is already public. Another observation about what you just said, I was thinking that the information still has to be either the registries or the registers will still have the need to query the information from the clearinghouse. So I'm not sure if this scenario would be addressed by having the information only in the clearinghouse, because the registries are still able to query the information from the clearinghouse. I understand it's not the same to have the full list, but they still can get a list the strings by querying the clearinghouse. It would take certainly more effort, but it still could be done. So I'm not sure if with this observation that I'm making will affect in any the scenario that you are pointing out, Tom.
Thanks, Francisco. Any comments to that? None? Okay. Bill?
I guess like a follow-up on John McElwain's comment about these lists, the list of strings being particularly sensitive. I'm no expert, but I was under the impression that many, if not most, jurisdictions publish gazettes of trademark data on a regular basis, some of which are even done electronically, as I understand it. And large jurisdictions, such as the United States, certainly publish those things. I'm just trying to understand what makes this threat different than the threat of a gazette with respect to the to the possible misuse.
This is John McElwain. I'll just respond to that real quickly. You may have misheard me. My comment was that the identity of a string is not, to me, as heightened of a concern as the full amount of trademark data. But I still think, because of past problems, that it would be a beneficial requirement to have even those maintained as confidential piece of information at the registrar and even at the trademark clearinghouse level.
Yeah. All right. And I think, John mentioned earlier, some of the, even though some of the same data is public through a variety of sources, it's not all consolidated to the extent that it could be in the clearinghouse. So that's one of the aspects. Any other comments about data misuse or abuse concerns or other protections that are in this set of issues? Yes, Tom?
I wanted to speak to your last bullet here about the cryptographic tokens that we might use during Sunrise. And obviously, we all understand what they are, but my one concern I have is that the end users that would be required to use these might not be so familiar with them, and it may in fact turn trademark owners from using the clearinghouse if they have to use a token for every trademark they have validated in a clearinghouse. So I wonder if we could have a discussion about what problem we're trying to prevent or solve with a token that perhaps, and discuss whether or not it's overkill for the potential danger that might exist.
Okay, Tom, can you maybe phrase the question again? I'm not sure I caught the gist of it.
The question is, we're talking about possible misuse or abuse, and I guess during Sunrise, we want to do two things. We want to authenticate or somehow verify that the Sunrise applicant is authorized to apply for a particular domain name. And so we don't want fraud occurring during Sunrise. It is also a secondary issue. I guess the question is, are those real concerns, and are we trying to prevent that? Or are we simply trying to achieve some other benefit through the use of a token? Again, my concern is if we make this too complicated to use, then trademark owners will be turned off by it.
Okay, thanks, Tom. I have Will Shorter.
Yeah, just responding to that. A token is essentially can be displayed in a group of text. And while it's probably not as simple as a shorter code like the code that we've talked about, it's not exactly, I don't feel, complicated. This also has the added benefit of a significant higher level of security and for authentication that was expressed by some on previous calls. And it would also allow the registry to not even have to go to the trademark clearinghouse. By authenticating via the private key, that would reduce burdens on the trademark clearinghouse from a cost perspective and having to be highly available, as the registry could just use the private key as a way to authenticate.
Thanks, Will. Any other comments on that? Okay. Well, the points been raised a few times that we are trying to create something that is not overly complex or burdensome to use. I think part of the appeal of the token idea was that people seem to feel that it could save steps as far as going back and forth and verifying information. Any other points or comments on this particular set of issues? Margie.
Thank you, Karen. I just wanted to clarify something that Christine noted in the note about the strings, and then I just want to clarify my understanding that the string what we're talking about is not, it's simply just the trademark name. It's not even the list of the trademark and the list of TLDs that it's registered in. And so I'm trying to understand how much of a risk of abuse is there when all it is just the trademark name that's registered in the clearinghouse. And I just want to confirm my understanding is correct if that's not true.
Now, Margie, I think you cut out a little bit during the last part of the sentence. Can you maybe repeat that?
Sure. I just wanted to clarify that my understanding was correct, that the strings we're talking about are just the trademark itself, not even the TLD that's attached, that they're registered in. And so I'm just trying to understand, given that if my understanding is correct, does that minimize the risk of fraud or abuse?
Yeah, so I think that is correct. That was what we were, when we're talking about, strings, it's just, strings of characters that happen to be also records in the clearinghouse. And, what we've heard is there's lower risk with just that set of data than there is in a more complete set of data, but there does still seem to be some risk or concern about how that list of strings could be used. Tom, you have a comment?
Yeah. I guess the comment is that anytime you make available a list of names in a file that can be scripted, it's obviously more things can be done to it in volume than a blind query against the database. And the strings are probably more represent more than the number of trademarks in the clearinghouse, since it represents all the possible domain names that match trademarks in the clearinghouse. So there could be a multiple of a number of records that actually exist.
Right. So there's a definition, for example, of identical match, that it would, it disregards spaces or hyphens, for example, in a trademark. So there are other, there are variations of the name that is registered in the clearinghouse that would be in that list of list of strings as well. All right. Anything else on this topic?
Yeah, this is Francisco. I have a couple of comments. So on the data locations, one of the issues that could be introduced if the decision was made to go for the following the caching of the strings in the registers or register is you need to synchronize that information periodically. So perhaps we need to think of a timer. There probably have to be certain requirement on the registers of registrars of hope, then they have to synchronize the information from the clearinghouse, this list of strings, so they don't go, for example, 1 week or 1 month without synchronizing the information from the clearinghouse. So potentially missing that some of the names that are being registered in a TLD are actually already registered in the clearinghouse. So the notice to both the potential registrant and the trademark holder are not sent or shown as needed. I was wondering if there is any sense of what should be the requirement for these synchronizations. Will it be, for example, a daily synchronization acceptable? Does it have to be more often, or can it be in periods longer than 1 day, for example, 1 week? What are the thoughts on this issue?
Okay, I have Will Shorter and then Tom Barrett.
Really good question, Francisco. So, you know, I think we have a good method to do this today called the domain name system, right? So really what we're doing here is kind of matching these domain names these mark names to domains. And so, you know, what you could do is you could have the clearinghouse make this file available, you know, via like a zone transfer, like a DNS file. You could have a time to live. So shows you how old the file is, and then, you know, the trademark clearinghouse would need to replace the file every X period of time, whatever that is. And the registries and registrars could look up against that file. So that's one way to do it.
Thank you. This is a question from me out of ignorance. Is there, the file can have a time to live. Is there anything that prevents, is there anything technical means that prevents, that could prevent them from just keeping it for longer and relying on it? Is there any, I mean, it doesn't disappear. It just is less valid after that point, right?
Sorry, Karen, I missed the last part.
So Will was just speaking about, you know, files have a time to live, and that's an indication in the data. My question was just whether, it's, you know, you'd be relying on the recipient to refresh it. There's no technical means of forcing someone to get updated data. That's what I was trying to clarify.
So there is always a way to let the party that needs to refresh the data know that there is new data.
Okay.
But it's up to that party to actually do the update. And as Will mentioned, DNS is a good example of something that works pretty much that way. And that reminds me that someone, I'm sorry, I forgot who was this person, mentioned the idea either in Singapore or in the car that one possible way to do this synchronization is to use DNS itself. So this could be something to consider.
Okay, great. Thank you. So Tom Barrett and then Will again.
Yeah, so I think Francesco's question was, you know, could the clearinghouse somehow, when it publishes its list of eligible domain names, only publish the ones that are not registered, and somehow that would avoid disclosing information to people who have the data. The problem with that, is that you'd have to update that list on at least daily basis to keep track of both new registrations as well as deletions. And the simple act of doing that, in fact, is information if someone is keeping track of those daily updates, just as they do with daily zone files. So I don't know if it particularly solves the problem by trying to hide or mask new registrations in this daily file. I think the information is still getting out there, and I think you're making it more complicated if the clearinghouse needs to publish a unique list for each TLD that it's serving.
I have a clarification question, Karen.
Yes, please, Francisco.
Tom, you mentioned a relation with TLDs. I'm not sure I probably missed something here. What I was talking about is the list of strings derived from the trademarks as defined in the trademark clearing house spec in the register agreement that defines how you derive the actual strings that could be registered. For example, removing space and dashes, as Karen mentioned. So that is the list that I was talking about that will have to be synchronized between the clearinghouse and either the registers or the registrars. So I'm probably missing something here. I don't see what is the relationship with a specific TLD.
Hi, it's Tom again. I think we're talking about the same strings. The impression I got was your suggestion was that the list would be updated for each TLD to reflect essentially the registrations that had occurred during Sunrise so that they were no longer part of the list, which I didn't think made sense, but maybe I misunderstood what you were saying.
Okay. So you're saying that the list of registrations that occur in a specific TLD, but the way you understand it, you will not update anything on the, you will not remove them from the list of strings in the clearinghouse because even if a specific string from the clearinghouse was registered in a TLD, that might not be true in another TLD. So you want still to keep that string in the list from the clearinghouse, so other registries or registrars can use the full list.
Yeah, so we're in agreement.
All right, thanks. I have Will Shorter next.
Thanks, Karen. Yeah, just to kind of answer your question, I think you know a lot of the communication protocols and lookups. We're going to have to get some probably work in the IETF to define a lot of what you're asking and talking about, just so everybody's kind of on the same sheet of music. Where you know it's kind of best practice, right? So I think you know that will go a long way in helping help define some of that. And you know the alternative to somewhat out of date lookup file is to obviously have the trademark clearinghouse be 100% always available, and just from running the .NET registry and some of the significant and stringent service levels that are a part of those contracts, I know for a fact that it's extremely expensive to replicate data centers in places to help ensure that type of 100% availability. I mean, you're talking about some significant costs that the community would have to bear in order to support that kind of lookup system, if that is required.
Okay, thank you. Well, all right. Are there any other comments on this issue before we move on? If not, then I'll ask Bill to move on to the next issue.
Very good. Thank you. The other issue we'd asked to ask for comments on for today's call was to discuss some of the pros and cons and design requirements for using different kinds of existing protocols to implement the clearinghouse functionality. We did not get a lot of comments, but the comments seem to revolve around using existing protocols like EPP, WHOIS, DNS, HTTP, and SMTP for various functions. So the questions the first question that came to mind was, are there critical communications that are not yet represented? Such as token distribution, the idea of whatever token or tokens or codes or whatever we're going to call those for Sunrise, sharing that data, that distribution, didn't seem to be covered in the existing model that had been proposed. But we're really interested in trying to get at the business drivers that should be used to require a given protocol for implementation, and to think about how those protocols address the misuse and abuse concern in particular, since that seems to be such a large issue in the minds of so many. And again, are there alternative models that might be appropriate to pursue? So are there any questions or comments on that?
This is Francisco. Do any of you on the call see any issue with considering the use of EPP for the communications between registry and registrar in case they are needed? Using EPP probably with some extension as necessary. Do any of you see any issue with continue using EPP for all the communications between registry and registrar?
Okay. I have Tom Barrett in the queue.
Yeah, I guess my first impression is that we should not be on the bleeding edge of any new technology here. The clearinghouse should focus on proven protocols. It should not be the guinea pig for something new, especially given the tight deadlines we're facing. So registries and registrars are already familiar with EPP. I think we should stay with it. The idea of using tokens has benefits. I don't think the business driver for that is abuse or misuse of clearinghouse data. It's actually being driven by some other considerations. So I don't think it's necessarily needed if our concern is misuse or abuse of data. So I would vote for using protocols that we know work, that are already well-known and familiar with the various participants in the DNS industry.
Okay, thank you for that, Tom. Any other comments?
This is Francisco. So in that same venue as Tom mentioned, so EPP could be used for registers and registrars. On the lookup of strings, so will it be DNS the perfect match here? Do anyone has any comments on this?
Francisco, would you mind repeating the question?
Oh, sure. So I was thinking for the lookup of strings, the list of strings that we mentioned are derived from the trademarks register in the clearinghouse. We mentioned that if caching is allowed in the registries or registrars, you will need some considerations for synchronization, and as Will point out, DNS has already some of these capabilities, so we could build from that, or we could actually use DNS for this purpose, since this is of course a proven protocol that we already use in the industry. I was proposing that this is probably the perfect match for the lookup of strings, because the clearinghouse could put the information in the DNS in certain zone to be agreed. That can be synchronized by the registries or registrars that need to use this, and the DNS already has the mechanisms for the synchronization. So do any of you in the call has any thoughts on this?
Sorry, this is Norm. It'd be hard to say whether DNS would be a good use or whether it's good to use DNS or not until there's more details provided around how you intend to use DNS and how much volume you are going to put on it.
Okay, thank you, Norm. I also have Tom.
Yeah, I addressed this, I think, in my written comments, but I actually did propose that we use the zone file model for this data. As I said, it works for .com with 100 million names. I think it's going to work fine with the clearinghouse, even if it has one-tenth of that. So I think a zone file concept works well. It's simply a zone file. There's no identifying information in there through the trademark that the domain name is associated with. So there's no way to, from that file itself to trace it back to the trademark or trademark owner. So I think it addresses some of the privacy issues and possible misuse of the data, while offering a pretty lightweight mechanism for data access and even possible data distribution as well.
Okay, thank you. And I have Will Shorter.
Yeah, I generally agree with the comments Tom just made. I think the only question or management issue you got to address is the latency issue. And other than that, I think that can be managed. So that's my only comment.
Great, thank you.
This is Francisco. I have a clarification question. What is the issue with latency that is being raised? I'm not sure I understand.
This is Will. I think the issue with latency is, I think it can be managed, but, somebody puts their mark into the clearinghouse and it's not published to this zone file within whatever their expectation is on timing. But again, I think it can be managed. I just think it's something to be aware of. That's all.
Oh, okay. This is Francisco. I understand now. So I guess this could be one way to address this would be to have a requirement on the clearinghouse to update this information in within certain period of time. For example, in the case of the new ETLD, there is a service level requirement on how on the update frequency of domain names in the DNS. I don't remember the exact value, but the point is, you could have a requirement on the clearinghouse on how often they have to put new things into the DNS or whatever the mechanism that is decided to be used to distribute the information for this lookup of strings service. Thank you.
All right, I've got Tom up.
Yeah, it strikes me this is a good topic for P4, where we would want, as a metric, keep track of the time lag between the validation of a trademark in the clearinghouse and the time it takes to get into the zone file and available to TLDs to use. So that's not just a thought that occurred to me. We should make this one of the metrics we keep track of.
Yep, thank you. Anything additional on EPP or DNS or related issues?
This is Francisco. On the use of Whois for looking up domain register and information, the only potential issue here is that Whois does not define a way to encode data. So it would be, it could be problematic to handle information that is beyond ASCII. Perhaps, of course, this could be addressed by using web-based GUIs, for example, and there are certainly options that are being discussed in another related arena to use, for example, RESTful GUIs, which is a form of web-based GUIs. And in that case, you could address the issue of internationalization in this use of the lookup of the domain registration information.
All right. Tom, you have a comment?
Yeah, I think the who is of domain name registrant information really comes back to what is in the notice that is sent to trademark owners, which hasn't been defined yet. But the question is, does that notice actually say Joe Blow from Boston, Mass. Has registered this domain name and here's his contact details, or does it simply say, you know, Microsoft.xxx has been registered. I mean XXX. Microsoft.bank has been registered, and go check out who it is to find out who did it for you. So, you know, I guess until we define what's in the notice, we may or may not need to access it, who is, for that particular information. And I assume the claims notice, it's not required because we're actually displaying the claims notice in real time to the potential registrar, not sending him an email later.
Yeah, so this is Karen, and if I remember correctly, one of the comments was talking about, and maybe it wasn't on this issue, but saying that the, you know, that the notice to the trademark holder doesn't need to, can contain a link to the who is or similar information, but it doesn't necessarily need to, provide all of the contact details. Was it, Francisco, was there anything else on this?
Nothing comes to mind.
Okay. All right, any further comments on communications protocols?
This is Francisco. I remember at the beginning of the call, someone mentioned the possibility of some emails trying to portray the notice that have to go up to the registrants or the trademark holders. I was thinking that one possible way to address this is to have this notice to be digitally signed in some form, some of the options that are out there, so that the registrants and the trademark holders have a way to verify this. Of course, here the issue is how many people are actually able to do this verification. But I thought I should mention this in case it's of interest to anyone.
Okay, thank you, Francisco. Anyone else? Okay, so thank you. Thank you to all. This is the first of the technically oriented calls that we've had. So, I think we've started a good discussion on, and you've given us quite a bit to think about in terms of the things that we've discussed today. There will be a subsequent period of time for any follow-up written comments that you may wish to provide based on the discussion. And I'll turn it back over to Bill on the wrap-up.
All right. I will wrap up quickly. I know that it's Friday. It's Friday almost before Christmas. I know many of us are busy. Our next call on Tech of Topics will be at 0800 UTC on 13 January. That is, we'll have some new materials out just after the new year, particularly on issue T2, the data access issue. And we'll be accepting comments on any of the T-series issues until 2359 UTC on January 10th, so that we can prepare for the next call. And as a reminder, please don't resubmit prior comments, only send new recommendations and observations. With that, I'd like to thank everyone for their time and effort today, and look forward to speaking to you again after the new year.
All right. Thank you, Bill, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you.